Francesco Bonfiglio has been the CEO of the Gaia X project until last year and has founded now a new company called Dynamo. At this year's IONOS Summit, Francesco gave a talk called A True European Cloud Alternative. Welcome, Francesco.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank you for having me.
So, Francesco, do we need a European cloud alternative?
Yes, of course. It goes without saying we need it now more than ever. And we need it for two reasons. The first is that we don't have it yet. Nobody actually realized a true European alternative to the cloud service providers that nowadays are very few. We can count them on three fingers. And the second reason is that cloud is the foundation of data economy, and data economy is the foundation of the future of our economy. So there cannot be any future if we lose control on such a critical infrastructure. Any economy has a critical infrastructure. The old economy used to have the energy grid. The new economy has the data grid, if you want, and cloud is the data grid. So we cannot live without at least trying to build our own independence on the cloud.
A term that is often used in this context is data sovereignty. Why is this so important? And maybe what does data sovereignty mean for you personally?
Sovereignty is a political term. And actually, it stands for the ability to apply your own rules in your own sovereign territories. And the reason why we talk about digital sovereignty is that digital can actually overcome any ability to apply your political right, your own rules, because digital is pervasive and the owners of digital platforms are becoming so big that they are bigger in terms of economical power or customers than the GDP or the citizens of any European government, for example. And that's why every government has got digital sovereignty in their agenda. But strictly speaking, technology is not about sovereignty. It's about controllability, transparency, and interoperability. So my own definition of sovereignty is you can be sovereign on a technology platform if that platform is transparent. So you see how it works. You see where your data are being handled. Controllable, so you can take decisions and not letting the platform decide for you, or, for example, where your data are being transferred to, and interoperable in such a way you are not locked in, you are not forced to stay in that platform, but you can move your data freely to any other platform. The combination of transparency, controllability, and interoperability to me equals to sovereignty when it relates to technology.
One important project, of course, that focused on this kind of digital sovereignty from the European perspective was, of course, Gaia X, which you headed for a couple of years. So how do you look back at your time at Gaia X?
Yes, actually, I joined Gaia X at the end of 2020, and I headed it until the end of last year. So it was 3 years, pretty intense. And in a nutshell, I believe Gaia X was a necessary initiative to increase the awareness of everyone, including the public opinion, on the need to regain control of the technology and gain sovereignty in the way that I was defining it. We also succeeded in defining, again, sovereignty as something that you can achieve only through trust. In other words, on the one side, the problem is not having a platform that you can control. But on the other side, the problem is that the companies are not using those platforms. So there is a problem of adoption. And the question why those platforms are not adopted, it is because of the lack of trust. And trust, again, relates to the capability to see transparently, to control, and to have the interoperability of those services that you need. So we decided to focus on achieving trust, and we decided that trust was achieved through transparency. And in order to achieve transparency, we defined a framework of trust made of a set of rules and of technology components. We call them the trust engine, capable to verify the compliance to those rules. So for the very first time, Gaia X translated a very abstract concept like digital sovereignty into something tangible and measurable objectively through technology, so not biased, not conditioned by any human being. Now, if I have to go back, and this was my claim from the beginning, I always said that the future of Europe, for what concerns cloud and data platforms, cannot be just in the definition of common standards and cannot be just in the definition of a think tank where we discuss and debate on the future of Europe. We must act as concretely as possible. Likewise, we did for the Airbus. So we needed and we still need an Airbus of the cloud. And in my age in GAIA-X, I said from the very early phase that GAIA-X should have become one day split in two parts. One remaining a foundation and association talking about common standards, but another part becoming an operating company, acting in the market to implement those standards and implement services based on those standards, and most importantly, implementing a federation of providers supporting those standards. That was, I think, the part that GAIA-X was not capable to drive, because unfortunately, as a foundation, as a non-for-profit association, you cannot operate in the market. You cannot create any advantage for any member. You cannot create any distinction between European and non-European members. So there is a list of limitations that prevent an association from doing that. But if I go back to the ages of Airbus, Airbus was built exactly for the same reason. Europe understood the power and importance of the aerospace industry, decided that we could not be slaves of the American aerospace industry of Boeing and McDonnell Douglas. First started with an association, because Airbus was started as a foundation, as an association, but all of a sudden realized that this had to turn into something, a factory capable to build aircrafts. And this is when Europe was capable to invest public money in supporting the creation of a consortium and creating aircrafts that then were successful in the global market. I think this is what has to happen, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do in very humble and small terms with Dynamo. But I decided to step off and try to make it happen in very small terms to show, if you want, to seed a plant in the ground and show that something like a federation can be done and can inject a new economical model that can become big, as big, maybe even bigger than the monopolism of the hyperscalers we have today.
We come back to this idea of a federation of European providers in a minute, but maybe one last thought about GAIA-X and a question. There was a lot of concern when the hyperscalers that you just mentioned were allowed to join GAIA-X. What do you think? Was this a necessary step? Was this a good step for GAIA-X? I mean, we're all talking about multi-cloud platforms, multi-cloud strategies. What did this mean for this whole project?
Yeah, at the time, this decision was very much debated. My personal take is that this was the right decision for a foundation, so for the association of GAIA-X. Because if you want to build something that is competitive in the global market, and that's what a European cloud has to be. It's not just for Europe. It has to be competitive in the global market. Then you have to act globally. So involving non-European players, I think, was a good idea, as long as their power was limited. And this was very well defined in the statutes of GAIA-X, because they cannot sit in the board of GAIA-X. Actually, some of the companies sitting in the board, they have strong relationship with hyperscalers. So they ended up being representing indirectly the interests of non-European cloud service providers. And this was a kind of a problem. But it is the same problem that you find at the table of politics. For example, the discussion of the Data Act or the Data Governance Act or the AI Act, even though there is no American companies sitting there, you may know well that there were conflicts when Europe was trying to introduce restrictive measure that would reduce the superpower of hyperscalers. So this is part of the political dimension of GAIA-X. When it gets to, let me say, the strategy, my idea and my strategy in GAIA-X was to build something that was needed by the market, was non-existing, and being the first doing it, and in a non-competitive way. And actually, this idea of the trust framework was pretty smart, because we didn't say you bad American boys cannot play with us. Not at all. We simply said, if you want to play with us, please show us the characteristics of your services in a transparent way. So it was a totally inclusive approach, and we could not be accused to be discriminatory or against the competition law. So I think it was a very good decision in political terms. I do understand that the public opinion would, hope into let's fight just for us and keep them outside. But this is not the way to win. It takes longer. But again, I think that the part that was missing was acting in the market to make something happen, and not the fact that in an association you can have multiple voices. That's perfectly fine. The part missing was having an execution into the market to build something different. And I think that is still missing. Actually, I'm so convinced of this theory that if I look back at what happened when I started communicating that our approach was inclusive and based on transparency, all the hyperscalers, and this is not me saying it, if you go back, there were reports from big American analysts saying that, yes, despite Gaia-X is late, we need to admit that they were successful in making the hyperscalers move and come to Europe to explain how they can be sovereign. And nowadays, you see that there is no single hyperscaler not having their own sovereign cloud offering. Everyone means something different, but they have the same title. So I think this was a success, and they were faster and more, you say, productive in riding the wave of sovereignty and implementing their own offering. Still, we were late as European, and we didn't act doing the same.
Yeah, I just can confirm that. I was 2 weeks ago at the Smart Country Convention in Berlin, the biggest German convention about IT in the political sphere. And there, basically at every booth, you could read data sovereignty, being it a European or an American provider. So that definitely has become mainstream. Talking about execution and about federated service, I think that's really the main idea behind your new company, Dynamo. At the IONOS Summit, if I remember correctly, you called it a virtual cloud service provider. So what exactly is Dynamo?
Yeah, I use that definition because it's interesting. Somebody says that, okay, so everybody tries to classify you when you do something, but Dynamo is pretty new. So Dynamo is not just a directory of existing services published on a single web page. Dynamo is not just a commercial aggregator of multiple suppliers deciding to partner together. Dynamo is a real platform of services that automate all you need to act in a seamless way together with the other partners of the same ecosystem. Likewise, you were part of the same company. So if you have a company delivering services in one territory and another one delivering services in another territory, and they get acquired by a third company, and all the three companies become one, the acquirer has to go through a lot of work to integrate the catalogs, marketplaces, the sales processes, the cloud management platforms, the order management systems. So all these things are automated through the platform of Dynamo. In such a way, every participant can join Dynamo and resell anybody else's solution. Likewise, it was their solution. It's a very simple concept, but it doesn't exist in the market because Dynamo does not sell directly to the end customers of IONOS. Dynamo enables IONOS to resell services from Aruba or vice versa. But IONOS will have its own catalog, its own marketplace that will be expanded, enhanced, augmented by Dynamo, and we'll be able to reach a broader market, maybe reach a new market where it's not present, and without losing anything. So you continue to be independent and autonomous, but all of a sudden your portfolio becomes bigger because it's enriched by the portfolio of all the other participants. So it's a real integration platform that makes the operations from the qualification of participants, from the contractualization of the partnership, from the order management, down to the provisioning of the services connecting to the multiple technological platforms of the multiple suppliers, completely seamless to the participants. That way, we remove the burden of finding the right partner to expand and enhance your solutions when you don't have it, Also, we remove the burden of compliance because we automate the process of compliance against the European regulation. And here is where, for example, I adopt again the GAIA-X engine, expanding it to make further verifications. And we automate also the provisioning, connecting directly to the platform of IONOS, the platform of Aruba, the platform of GIGAS, the platform of the many suppliers that we are already working in such a way you push the button and sell. And this is not happening in a normal marketplace, in a normal B2C marketplace. We are not B2C, we are B2B. This is not happening in most of the marketplaces that are not handling the B2B processes. None of the marketplaces integrate with the cloud management platforms of their providers, and the biggest marketplaces are just for one single provider. So, of course, if you look at the marketplace of Microsoft, it's something similar to what we are doing with Dynamo, but it's coherent because it's made of only Microsoft services. If Microsoft should do something like this, integrating many other providers, it would be a nightmare. We are trying to solve this nightmare and to create an open ecosystem where any European participant, so it must be a European company, it must be a European provider of any type of cloud service, can be IaaS, PaaS, SaaS. It must be provided from within the European territory. Any one of them can join. Small, large companies, startups, doesn't matter. As long as they are European and they qualify against these principles, they can join this ecosystem. And anybody offering the service can resell also the services offered by the others. Nothing to lose, something to gain. In other words, it's a big network of resellers. And this is very important because the business model of the Americans, the hyperscalers, is very largely based on indirect sales compared to the Europeans, which are very much based on direct sales. So the portion of sales of the European cloud service provider is predominantly direct sales, whilst the sales of the Americans is almost exclusively indirect sales through their network of partners. And we need to replicate the same model, otherwise Europe will never scale the volumes of the hyperscalers. It's not just single company that have become big. They have become big through the network of their partners. We don't have such a network of partners.
Building such a platform is, of course, a first step, but you mentioned you wanted to have a seamless integration with the push of a button, but I guess most of these providers still have kind of individual APIs, individual front ends. So how do you get to interoperate these services together?
That's a very good question. We have embedded a layer of abstraction on top of the existing technology platform. I will not get into the technical detail, but we are embedding a list of technologies to virtualize the infrastructure layer, for example, which is the most complex, of course, but as well to compose services, for example, a SaaS onto a IaaS. On the virtualization, we basically can define a recipe to instantiate, let's say, a virtual machine or a Kubernetes cluster, and then act on many different specific platforms of the different providers, activating their different APIs. So nowadays, we have one recipe, one proxy, let me say, that activate that recipe implementation onto multiple APIs corresponding to the multiple supplier cloud management platforms. But the good news is that the companies that we are talking to, they like the idea of Dynamo, but they also like it to the point they understand that maybe this is an opportunity for them to join up and start thinking about defining common APIs for the future. When this will happen, of course, we will have to do some rework, but it will be much better. On the other side, we could not wait for this to happen before starting. So yes, it's quite of an effort today, but we are happy to do it because we know that this will demonstrate to many companies that maybe defining common APIs will be a further win-win. At that point, we will simply adapt to the new common API that I hope will come out soon.
You mentioned IONOS, Aruba as some examples of European cloud providers. I mean, we are all companies competing with each other in these markets. So how easy is it for you to bring these companies at the table?
All these companies are competitors in the market, and that's absolutely normal and a good thing. The problem is that all of them share the same challenges. And the biggest challenge for European cloud service providers today is survival. In other words, all the European cloud service providers collectively have lost their market share from 26% in 2017 to 10% nowadays. So, and unfortunately, this was a linear decline. So if you draw the line, you understand that basically we have another 3 to 5 years in the best case of survival, after which European cloud service provider will become resellers of non-European technologies. A further proof of this fact is that all the hyperscalers, as you well know, are buying every single square meter and gigawatt of data center in Europe. And again, in a few years, it will be game over. So the CEOs of these European cloud service providers, the larger ones, but also the smaller ones, now understand that it is not a matter of retaining your own small market, but we need to ally, they need to ally, they need to collaborate to survive and thrive. So creating a critical mass to leverage on each other, it's first of all a tactic to survive and retain a reasonable share of the market. But then this collaboration, this federative model, can grow faster than any other merger and acquisition model. At the same time, even the individual companies that want to grow through acquisitions, they may find in this ecosystem a lot of new companies, maybe smaller ones that can be good targets. At the same time, the smaller companies, they are possibly suffering even more. At the beginning of this year, let's not forget that most of the smaller cloud service providers, I'm talking about the ones with the 10 million less revenues a year, most of them were relying and still are relying on VMware stacks. And so when Broadcom came and threatened them, they had to face the challenge where, what can I do if my margins shrink and I have no alternatives to sell other solutions? The risk is even bigger for smaller ones. But then if you look at the startups, we have a very good ecosystem of startups. The report from Mario Draghi highlighted we have more than 1,800 innovative startups in Europe now. But where do they go to get the money? They go over the ocean because they cannot find investors and they cannot find an ecosystem where they can become visible and grow. If they are attracted by Dynamo, maybe they can partner with larger, for example, cloud service providers that are struggling to enrich their portfolio with innovative solutions. So you see that we can create not only an aggregation, and you should not see the federation as a way to compete one another carefully. No, actually, the federation is a way to grow together. Everybody will continue to have their own market, but will grow his market. And you can see your partner in a federation like a competitor or like a reseller. It's up to you. And I think it's more of a psychological thing. They sell me, why should I be against them? But yes, but if they sell me, then it means they are selling me to their customer. But they would do anyway, because in the end, it's the customer deciding it. So what's the problem? So I think there is a new awareness to answer your question. So the leadership of these companies understand that we need to work together in order to survive. And also, they start to understand that a collaborative model is not a win-lose, actually it's a win-win. At the same time, if you work together with others, you can have more eyes to look at the market. You can understand better what the others do. You can make more savvy investments in innovation. You can find easily faster and better partners. So there is no drawbacks. And honestly, I think that European market is big enough and fragmented enough in terms of culture, territories, heritage, relationship, historical relationship with the customer, language, that your customers will be happy to continue working with you if you look bigger. They would not have an interest to go and work with somebody in Italy just because they saw a service that you can resell. They will keep working with you and you can resell a service from Italy. And the same would be true for the Italian customers working with Italian suppliers.
So the companies working together is one thing. You mentioned that basically every government in Europe has digital sovereignty on their agenda. But are these governments actually doing enough? Have they understood the importance actually? And do deeds follow the words?
The government and the European Commission, they understand the need for federation of suppliers. And the problem is that this was not implemented in the past 5 years since the beginning of the European data strategy announced by President von der Leyen back in 2019. Why this has not been implemented? Because to do something like this, you should invest in the market and create an advantage for European players only. And this is against the competition law the antitrust law and the law of state ads. So believe it or not, I believe that the key roadblock is our own legislation, preventing Europe to invest on our own assets, to invest on our own industrial companies, and preventing us to restrict, let me say, the access of non-European subjects to European investments. But the governments I'm talking to and the institutions I'm talking to explaining what Dynamo does, all they told me, thank you, Francesco, please go ahead because this is what we need, but we simply could not make it. So my hope is that I can be naive. I was telling this to a friend earlier this morning, but my dream is that Dynamo is seen as a super micro Airbus of the cloud, that one day the institutions, the governments, the European Commission see it working and say, maybe this is a good model. Maybe we should invest in it. And I hope this will happen over the next year. So this is my hope. And I'm sure I'm already working with some governments that are trying to find a way to collaborate with us. Again, the problem is find a way to support a private initiative. And the key question is why we are a private initiative. Very simple. We don't want to be hostage of any law that prevents us from deciding we want to have just a European ecosystem, deciding what to do. And we want to go fast because there is no time. But we want to become something public. Yes, of course. To do that, I think we need to demonstrate that this model works. And this is my personal challenge, my personal mission. I hope I will succeed at the least doing something small, but showing that it can work.
Just a very recent announcement was that Google launched an open cloud coalition also to lobby the European Parliament. So I think there's still quite a bit of work to do for the European providers.
Oh, yes, a lot, of course. And this is just the beginning of it. So I'm not joking, but I keep saying that we are in a war and we should resist, because the tactic that is being put in place in the field by the American companies is great. So on the one side, they are lobbying on the political decisions, slowing down the adoptions of the new acts, or diluting, let me say, the restrictions that those acts asked for. On the other side, they are partnering with the leading governments in Europe, investing in local regions to show that their cloud can be adopted as a software stack in a completely European-based company, completely detached from the mother company and sovereign. On another field, they are investing in local territories, you know, billions and billions to create their data centers. On another field, they are buying the unicorns that we are building in Europe, so the Mistral, the Aleph Alpha, etc., so to retain the control on innovation. And last but not least, they are, you know, preaching on their sovereign cloud offering and offering resources for free, free training, free certifications. So this is a very ancient technique. The Romans used to use it. So when the Romans used it to conquer territory, they brought the Latin over there. So everybody's speaking the same language, everybody's Roman. So now everybody will speak Google certification, Microsoft certification. And at that point, you gain the control of the skills, you gain the control of the new generations of engineers, you gain the control of the future developments. So the battle is very broad. And unfortunately, the European cloud service providers are like, you know, Viet Congs, spread across the bush, and we need to, you know, come out by night and try to collaborate to make very effective attacks here and there, because it's impossible to put together the lobbies, the politics, the industrial investors like the US is doing. I think this is not possible. And let's not forget, we are very close to the American elections. And I think this will be a key milestone for the future of Europe. If America becomes stronger in terms of nationalism, Europe will have to ask the question, how are we going to remain independent economically? How are we going to protect our industry? How are we going to protect our data? And if I see Elon Musk being the right-hand man of Donald Trump, I ask myself a question, what is he going to get back if Trump is elected? And I think we should ask ourselves the question. I think the future is definitely going to be driven by data, by data platforms, by cloud platforms, and Europe should not continue to consider cloud a secondary priority. It's a primary priority, And there's a lot of work, you're right. And we should be more aware. We need to work together collaboratively. Also, for politics, industry, civil society. I'm doing just a small part of, I'm doing what I can do. I'm trying to group together, you know, cloud service providers. And I think this is already a big effort. But to be honest, I believe this should be broader and broader and broader. We should create broader coalitions, bottom up.
Thank you very much, Francesco Bonfiglio.
Grazie.